Hello, and welcome to today's teleconference. At this time, we are currently waiting for all the participants to arrive. Thank you for your...
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's webinar. My name is Dr. Dane Marco Di Cesare, and I'm the Data Manager and Coordinator at the New York State RTI Technical Assistance Center. I'll be facilitating the webinar today, and I have a few reminders for you. All upcoming professional development offerings are listed on our webpage, nysrti.org. A copy of today's PowerPoint and handouts will be available on the webpage. During today's presentation, please use the chat box for any questions or comments that you may have. At the end of today's presentation, there is a link to a brief evaluation. That link is in the bottom right-hand corner of your screen. We're very pleased to have Amy Piper with us today to present our first webinar in the Strand 19 series, RTI Implementation at the Administrative Level. Yes, it's still a thing. Everyone, welcome Amy.
Good. In the middle of taking a webinar, so if you hear something over the phone. It's okay. I can just put this on mute. I know how to use my own phone. You can come in.
Amy, are you with us?
Go ahead.
So we're going to start today's webinar. Amy, are you with us?
I am with you, yep.
Okay, so whenever you're ready.
Okay, great. Sorry about that. I didn't realize that I was on mute on my computer, so I apologize, Dave. I missed your intro.
Sorry about that. I think I had you accidentally on mute, so you missed my intro. Sorry about that.
That's all good. Well, welcome, everybody. I want to talk a little bit about RTI. That's an actually interesting photo there. I think that's probably about 10 years old, but anyway, it's all good. Thanks for coming to the webinar today. I don't know how much Dane shared, but just a little bit about my background. I've been working with the RTI TAC now for a little over 7 years, doing consultant work with different schools around New York State, working with State Ed on the regulations for RTI. I was fortunate enough to start my career as an elementary teacher and then became a school psychologist. And started my career actually in Ohio, where we did what we called intervention-based multifaceted evaluations. So we were doing response intervention back in the 1990s, believe it or not. So I was fortunate enough to have a lot of training about response intervention and moved to New York State in 2001. And so I was thrilled when the regulations and laws, well, the statute changed to more of an RTI model rather than a test-in-place model. So that's just a little bit of my background. Feel free to ask questions as we go through the presentation. I'd really like you to be able to make this useful to you. So anything that questions, if something doesn't make sense, please stop me. Or if you'd like to ask something specific to your building, too, feel free to type that in as well. And again, I woke up this morning, of course, losing my voice. So I will do the best that I can to make sure that you can all hear and understand me. So I wanted to put the learning targets down right away so everyone has a good idea of what we're going to cover at this afternoon's webinar. In the first session, we'll begin a brief overview of the regulations and the guidance regarding response intervention. We're really going to focus primarily on grades K through 4. We're going to really focus on administrative role and looking at the research behind the tiers, the frameworks, and implementation, as well as how the use of data is so important, and it really has indicated the need for building principals to have a really top role in the facilitation and implementation of RTI in order for it to be effective and to work. Any questions so far about the learning targets? Hopefully everybody is where you want to be, and this is what you want to hear about today. And just a little bit about my background in the school district that I'm currently working at. I am the elementary principal for Fredonia Schools. We have approximately 600 students in our building, K to 4. We have about 11,000 residents here in Fredonia in Western New York. We have about a 43% free and reduced lunch rate, which I think is going up daily, I hate to say it. And you can see our ethnicity and populations here. A lot of you have probably heard of Fredonia State, that college campus is here in our town, but it seems like many of the professors and people that work here actually do not live in Fredonia. We really have a lot of our community members are more blue-collar workers. So taking a look at the next slide, I really want to jump right in talking about how RTI was adopted by state ed and how this has changed the way we look at classification of students and how we really meet the needs of students, especially in reading. As you can see in Part 200.4 on July 1st, 2012, it was adopted by New York State that school districts shall not use the severe discrepancy criteria to determine whether or not a child has a learning disability in the area of reading. So it is very specific as far as the grade levels and also in the area of a learning disability in reading. This still comes up, gosh, I want to say at least monthly in my building. We've been doing RTI for a long time because we're looking at learning disabilities primarily in reading, where if you have a child that you may suspect of mental retardation or behavior difficulty, RTI does have its place, but it is not adapted by New York State as far as the regulation. So at this point, I really want to hear a little bit about you, who you are, and what your role is in your building. So Dane is going to throw up a couple of polls for you. You can just take a minute, let me know who you are and where your school district, school or district, is in the implementation of RTI. All right, that's great. All right, so mostly building principals, like a district administrator and teacher. And most of you are about the intermediate stages. So, again, ask questions. I want to make sure that this is valuable to you. So if you have a question about anything that I'm asking, if you would like further information about what I'm talking about or how to do a certain task, just let me know in the chat. That would be great. All right. Back to the presentation. And one other part of 200.4 that was addressed with RTI is the term team members was replaced with group members, which doesn't sound like a big deal. But the biggest thing with that is that the group members are now able to use RTI data, which is the pre-referral data that many of us use with our benchmarking, to help with the diagnostic assessments in assessing children, whether or not they have a learning disability. So I know our school psychologist doesn't do a whole lot of academic achievement testing anymore because we have so much data indicating over years how a child has responded to intervention and where they are academically. So that has really helped us be able to move away from something that was just a one-time test with Scott Johnson, to really be able to see a student's progress over time and how they've responded to certain interventions. Another quote that I really like, and I truly believe in, especially having been a school psychologist for about 15 years, is that the IQ achievement discrepancy didn't reliably distinguish between those students that were disabled and non-disabled. It was really difficult, especially working in the inner city, to really differentiate between those students that just didn't have the background information, the exposure to reading, to those students that were truly learning disabled. And the IQ achievement discrepancy did not ever tell us that. And we found, especially again when I was working in the inner city, many false positives, kids that were classified as learning disabled, but really just hadn't been given the exposure to reading or the early intervention. I truly feel that progress monitoring is one of the biggest things with RPI that really addresses the needs of students, and we really can see if students are making gains or not, and that really drives instruction. And this came up in the testimony to the President's Commission on Excellence in Education. When teachers use progress monitoring, the students make greater academic gains. And they so much as said that as much as 80% of the kids, they didn't even have interventions. Just keeping track of where they were academically and the teachers knowing where they were by using progress monitor was enough to make academic gains. So it's huge. It's really, really important. So I'd like to sort of do a little test, and this is something for you to take yourself, just sort of jot down on a piece of paper, that in the before, whether or not you feel like the statements are true or whether they're false. And then we're going to revisit this again at the end of the webinar to see if we've learned a little bit and if you've changed your mindset at all. So, you know, first one, do most schools employ a two-tier RPI model? Second question, determining who sees the intervention services is based on the recommendation of the child's teacher. Special ed teachers provide the bulk of intervention services. Number four, in New York State, choosing RPI is optional for identifying students with disabilities. And then the last one is just whether or not intervention services are provided in place of regular reading instruction in the general education classroom. So just a little note for yourself, and then you can take a look at the end. So as far as the three tiers, this probably looks very familiar to a lot of you. We use this a lot at the Technical Assistance Center as far as the pyramid goes. And really just the definition, and this is, you know, if I read in a textbook, RTI is the practice of providing high-quality instruction intervention matched to student needs. I want to talk more specifically about that because it really is important to make sure that the instruction and intervention is matched to the student needs in order to say whether or not it's effective. Monitoring progress on a frequent basis, so really looking at how the student is doing in relation to that need, often, weekly. Looking at learning rate over time and level of performance so we can inform our educational decisions. So again, this is one example of the three tiers, with tier one being really in the classroom, core instruction. It should ideally meet about 80% of the students' needs, and that's something I don't know a school district that doesn't struggle with this. Tier two is more intensive supplemental intervention, and that's where the child receives reading instruction 3 to 5 times a week, progress monitored weekly, or every other week, and they're getting this 20 to 30 minutes in a group. And then tier three being more one-on-one or one-on-two intervention, progress monitoring is minimally weekly to really assess if the child is making progress and if they're responding to those interventions. So why do we do this? Why do we look at this, especially early on? And I know this chart's a little bit outdated. I actually looked again to see if they had an updated study, but I think it is still very relevant. If you look at a typical hour and you think about your students, and you think about the family type, so whether a child's in welfare class, working class, or professional, you think about how many words that they're hearing every hour at home and what the quality is. And what that looks like over time. And this really speaks to me because it tells you a lot about the background that the students are coming into in kindergarten and the difference right there, depending on the type of background and the family type that they're coming from. So really that early intervention, that makes a difference, and we can really see whether or not it's effective pretty quickly. Some critical features of RTI, things that are really non-negotiables, and my staff hates it when I use those terms, but some of these are really non-negotiables. We have to use high-quality, research-based instruction and intervention. It can't be just a gut thing. It can't be just something you think might work. It really needs to be strategy and intervention that is really high-quality and research-based. If you look on the RTI TAC website, there's a great list of interventions and strategies that are research-based. They give you directions on how to use them, what skill to use them for. Many kudos to Dane for putting that together because I use that resource all the time with my teachers as a place to look for different types of interventions, especially if they're finding they have one that isn't really working. This gives them a source at the one spot, and they know it's research-based. It's really important to use interventions in increasing intensity, so not to start out with changing the program or doing something real intense, but really doing minimal interventions and increasing the intensity depending on if the child responds or not. Measurement, the universal screening, 3 times a year is imperative. I'd like to see it done even more if possible, but minimally 3 times a year. Whether you use iReady or Dibbles or AIMSLAB or FastBridge, whatever it happens to be, is your decision, but it really needs to be 3 times a year for every student. And then looking at that frequent progress monitoring to look at their level of performance, what level are they at, and what's their rate? Are they improving at the rate to catch up with their peers, or are they improving but at a rate that they will never come to catch up with their peers? It's important to look at that because I've had that conversation with teachers that they're making progress, but if it's not closing that gap, we need to do something different or more intense. It's just not enough. Our goal is to close that gap. And it's easier to do that with a kindergartner or first grader than it is when they get to fourth or fifth grade. Another critical feature of RTI is that database decision making. We can't just make decisions because we think a child isn't a good reader or we don't know if they're responding. We really need to make those decisions based on data because research has really, again, shown us that it's hard to keep track of that. It's hard to really know for sure, unless you have the data set to support it. And then the last critical feature I noticed is that multi-tiered model, is that the 3 tiers, you really need to increase in intensity, increase in what the interventions look like as you're going through the RTI process. Any questions thus far? Everybody's good, I'm hoping? All right. So looking at administrators. When we had our 14 model schools as a consortium over the last 6 or 7 years working with schools across New York State, we worked with 14 schools, consortium member went in frequently to meet with the schools and to implement RTI. We really looked at the data at least quarterly to see what was happening with these schools and if the student achievement was improving. And what we really saw consistently was that administrator buy-in and support, as well as professional development, were imperative. If we did not have administrator buy-in, if an administrator said, all right, yeah, I like RTI, it's a great idea, I'm going to have this teacher in charge of it, or they never come to the data meetings, or they never show up at the student assistance team, which have study meetings, it wasn't as effective. It just didn't work. The principal administrator really needs to indicate that this is a priority for them. They buy in, they support the teachers, and those are the schools where we saw the most success, the most successful implementation of a response intervention. So really, really important to have that administrator buy-in and support. The professional development piece needs to be aligned to where you see the needs come in for either the students or the teachers in order to have those high-quality research-based interventions and implementation with fidelity. That professional development really, really is important. And I would say probably most important is tier one, because that's where we hit the most students. So how do we get buy-in? Some of the things that we found in order to get buy-in was to really develop an RTI leadership team. Find some of the teachers on your staff that are respected by other teachers, that other teachers know are going that extra mile and having success with their students. Having those teachers really help you get that RTI leadership team, and then really assess who, you know, what's the staff reluctance? Why is there any resistance to RTI? What is going on? And if you have some of the teachers working with you, you'll get that because they're in the teacher's lounge, they're talking in the hallways, and they're hearing why there's resistance and what might the reluctance be. Really educate all stakeholders about the RTI model. I've been to board meetings. I've talked at Rotary. I've talked at PTA meetings. So the whole community really knows what RTI is and why we're trying to do it. Facebook, social media is a powerful thing. And if you can be proactive and really address some of those community groups about what RTI is and the importance of having student success at your in your school, I don't know any parent or community member that wouldn't agree with you. We really want to see our students succeed and have success, and that's why we're doing our TI. So really then identify those strengths and challenges both from within and outside of the school that can affect implementation of RTI. I know when I was working with Jamestown schools, we were implementing RTI, and then Common Core came into play and the new standards, and we were also then trying to implement all the modules and Common Core, and it was just a lot, and it was too much at that time to do at once. So really thinking about what else is happening in the district or the school and making sure that the timing's right, whether to revisit RTI or to implement it better, for lack of a word. And then really look at what's your rollout plan. What do you want to accomplish each year? Maybe the first year you really want to concentrate on just setting up the tiers, or you really want to focus on tier one, or whatever it might be, but really have an action plan. And I would say start with 3 years. What do you want to see happen over the first 3 years? What would be your goal? And then revisit it throughout the year to see where you are in the path of having that be successful. So if your goal the first year is really to make sure you have benchmarking in place and that the teachers are reviewing that at grade level, then great. So check them mid-year and see if that happening. And if not, why not? And do they need more support and professional development in order to do that? That would be a big component. For more administrator buy-in, really align RTI to other key district initiatives like PBS, multi-tier systems of support would be another one, improving student achievement, implementing the Common Core standards, whatever it might be. RTI really encompasses all of education, and you really can align it to just about any other academically related district initiative. RTI will just help it be better. We also know that RTI is a big push and has shown high student achievement. So in order to get teacher administrator buy-in, we know that RTI improves student achievement. It's important to get your teacher unions on board. What teachers need to know is that they're not being evaluated by their use of RTI. I would say that's almost an anti-buy-in, but really making sure your union knows you're not expecting anything outside of their contract. These are just best practices. For district administrators, really a tight, loose document. So principals know what is a non-negotiable, but what are some things that perhaps they can leave up to their school. So maybe at tier one, you might say, all right, it's a non-negotiable that you have 3 tiers, but what you determine as your curriculum at tier one is up to you. Whatever it might be that's acceptable to you at the district level, that tight, loose document is important so then the principals will have more buy-in and they feel like they own it more themselves. So this is just a question that can go out to your staff. You know, really, what appeals resonate best with your district to get initial buy-in? Is that appeal for social justice that is just fair, more fair to use RTI? That your own data isn't looking too great, so you know we need to change things? Emotionally, you know, if this is a retrial, would you want them just referred right to special ed, or would you want to see an RTI model in place? Connections more to what already exists, or compliance with federal and local laws and policies? So what do you think resonates best with your district? What do you think would appeal with people in your district? Just think about that as we go through the next couple of slides. So some main administrative points of RTI. The focus of study is really the core curriculum positive behavior support. So we really want to think about if 80% of our students really need to be successful at tier one, what does our core curriculum look like? And the positive behavior support. So is your core curriculum effective? If you look at your benchmark assessments and the majority of your students aren't successful, what do those discussions look like with teachers? Do you pull that data up on a screen at a grade level meeting, a staff meeting? Really having some of those open discussions about starting at core curriculum. What are we doing when we're meeting the needs of our students? Because to really just jump in and try and do RTI at all tier threes without looking at that is just overwhelming. But I think that also gets you buy-in from your staff looking at course curriculum. Perhaps you're doing the modules or adapting the modules. You know, we've been doing RTI for years, so we're down there, but we had a meeting yesterday with our instructional leaders, and that's a teacher from each grade level, and we took a look at our core curriculum. And, you know, it's not as good as we want it to be. We're doing okay, but we want to be doing great. So we need to revisit that core curriculum. And again, not using our guts, but really using research and data to show what curriculum works, what curriculum is effective, and what do our students need? Where are they lacking? Are they lacking in kindergarten, learning their letters? Are they lacking in writing? Where are they lacking? What skills do they seem to be missing that our curriculum isn't hitting? Is it because we're not doing the curriculum with fidelity, or is it because the curriculum itself is lacking? And sometimes those are hard conversations to have. Excuse me, but I think you need to have that core leadership team really be able to talk about that in an honest discussion. Because you don't want, as an administrator, them telling you one thing and then really the reality being something else. Again, I apologize. The positive behavior support is another piece. If your administrator is really just spending most of their time dealing with behaviors, really looking at tier one behaviors, what are the expectations in the classroom and as a school, where are the problem areas, and how can we address that first and foremost? Really need to start looking at that. So if you look at the second point, assessment really needs to be integrated into instruction. So you need to not only just look at your benchmark assessment, but really what are you looking at tier one that is telling you, what assessments are you using that is telling you that your instruction is effective? Whether it's, again, module assessments or chapter tests, how are the students doing with those assessments? And are the teachers looking at that information so they know that the students have mastered the skills? If they're not, I would stop right there and start there. Start doing that. Look at your assessments. Reflect on them. Are the students mastering the skills? Is there a pacing calendar with assessments built in where you're reflecting on those and having time to reteach and ensuring that those skills are mastered? Those assessments really need to be integrated into instruction. Teachers need to know ahead of time what the students will be assessed on so they can say, all right, I know at the end of this unit or at the end of this module, this is what the students will be expected to know so that instruction is part of their everyday. For number three, assessment calendar and protocols are followed. So you have the assessments right on the calendar, again, whether you're just starting with benchmarks or if you're doing quarterly assessments, whatever you might be doing. And that you're really following the standardization, so you're following those protocols. So you know you're comparing apples to apples. You're not having one second grade teacher assess their students one way and another one assess them another way, because believe me, I've had that happen. And we don't realize until we look at it. And we have, this just even happened as recently as last quarter, we are doing common formative assessments. And one second grade classroom just bombed the test. And we couldn't understand why, and she was in tears and just felt the test was way too rigorous. Well, she had given the students a much shorter time limit in completing the test, and the rest of the second grade teachers had chunked the test and had given the students the amount of time, as much time as they needed to finish within reason. So, of course, her scores were much lower. It wasn't because the students necessarily didn't have the skills. It was just that they didn't have the time, and it was a long time for them to sit for one test. So really making sure those protocols are followed. The next point is the six data points are used to determine the success of intervention. So really waiting until there's at least six data points. Before that, you really don't have enough information to tell you if that intervention is successful or not. Tier one intervention should have strategic monitoring as needed, so that benchmark assessment. It's really looking to see, again, at least three times a year, if not more, not quarterly, to see if the students are learning what you need them to learn at that grade level. Tier two interventions really need to be looked at least every 2 weeks, at least every 2 weeks, to make sure that those students are making the progress that they need or if things need to be tweaked. And the tier three interventions really need to be progress monitored weekly, if not more. Because if you're spending that many resources, whether it's teacher resources or supplies and materials, you want to make sure that it's effective, that it's having the impact that you want it to have. So again, going back to that question in the green box, what do you want the students to learn? What is your point? What is your purpose? Are your interventions addressing what you want the students to learn? Looking at number five, data is analyzed to plan instruction and interventions by team. So looking at the data, whether you're looking at your benchmark data, whether you're looking at quarterly data, or whether you're really just looking at everyday data, really looking at that to plan instruction. It's important when you look at the quarterly data and the benchmarking data three times a year to indicate, all right, these students are not making growth. We need to plan our instruction around that. If it's a kindergarten student and they're showing that they're below the 10th percentile in letter sound fluency, the intervention needs to be addressing letter sound fluency. The goal needs to be letter sound fluency, and they need to be progress monitored in letter sound fluency. It sounds basic, but I think that's something I've seen in every school that I've worked at, that the intervention doesn't necessarily align with the goal, which doesn't necessarily align with the progress monitoring. They really need to make sure that the instruction and the interventions and the goals are all aligned and that we're looking at that data. We're not just doing the benchmark assessments and putting them on a shelf or in your computer. You're really looking at that and using that as a team to plan instruction. Something that we do at Fredonia is we do action plans every quarter by grade level, and our RTI teachers actually do that by grouping to really make sure they're reflecting on what are the skills that the children are lacking in, what have they mastered, and what do they need to reteach, and how are they going to do that? Not just what, but how. Are they going to use exit tickets? Are they going to use bell work? Are they going to have small group time during GRAIR, focus on their specific skills? But really, what is the action plan to address the skill deficits? And that's just the tier one. Number six, staff uses differentiated instruction strategies to meet student needs. So really, again, looking at those deficit areas and making sure you're addressing those. We don't want a group pulled off of fluency if they're lacking comprehension. We don't want a group pulled off of fluency if they're only lacking vocabulary. Whatever it happens to be, those strategies need to address the student needs. For number seven, tier two and tier three interventions should be offered every day, but at least every day for tier three. Tier two needs to be a minimum, really, of 3 days a week. We do have some of our tier three interventions happening 4 days a week for 40 minutes. That depends on the age of the kids. Really, a kindergartner or a first grader, that'd be too long for them to sit. But for a third, fourth, or fifth grader, depending on the student, definitely depending on the student, 4 days a week might work. Number eight, tier two and three interventions must supplement the general ed curriculum. It cannot take the place of gen ed curriculum because those students really need to have exposure to that gen ed curriculum, but then they need to have those tier two and tier three interventions so they can close the gap and have that extra time for instruction if they're not making the achievements that they need to make. So for number nine, using research-based best practice instructional strategies, that's important. It has to support the learning and behavior of all children. And again, I would check out the RTI TAC website. It's amazing what Dane has put on there. Excuse me, as a list of research-based best practices. And then, sorry, that should be number 10. Curriculum, behavior, and instruction practices should be implemented with fidelity. So when you come back to the table, and you take a look to see if the child has made progress or not, one of the first things we look at is attendance. Because if a child hasn't been here, we can't say that they've not responded to intervention if they haven't received the intervention. So we take a look at attendance. I mean, we put that in the parking lot, knowing that that needs to be addressed. We'll set up a parent meeting. But we really table that until the child is there and we're ensuring that they've received those instructions, interventions with Fidelity. The same thing with curriculum. If we have a curriculum that hasn't been implemented with Fidelity, maybe a teacher tried it, after a week didn't like it, tried something else, that we really need to have the data points to show whether or not the child responded. Behaviorally, if there's been any behavior problems, and again, sometimes that impacts attendance, where they're pulled out of the classroom or they're missing class, we can't say that the interventions have been done in Fidelity. Really important things to look at. Question that we ask ourselves weekly in our team meetings, how will we respond when students don't learn? What will we do? And how will we respond when students do know it? So we need to have an action plan in place for the students that aren't responding, aren't mastering the skills, but also when the students do know the skills. So differentiating that instruction so you meet the needs of all students. So you don't have a group of students sitting there that know it and are having to sit through lessons that they don't need, but we also don't want to move ahead, especially with some of the foundational skills. And that's where those small group differentiation times really come into play. So looking at the program design here at Fidelity Elementary School, we have replaced our academic intervention services with RTI, but for the service of this webinar, I'm using the academic intervention services label. We note that all the academic intervention services are provided for any student who has not met the benchmark at their level or mastered foundational literacy skills. And we use AIMSLab. We've been using AIMSLab for many years now. We moved to AIMSLab Plus this year. We look at students that are below the 25th percentile for Tier 2 and below the 10th percentile for Tier 1, or Tier 3, I'm sorry, Tier 1. So we have really a four-tier system. Tier 1 are our students who are all Gen Ed. Tier 2 are the students that are below the 25th percentile. Tier 3 are students below the 10th percentile. And our Tier 4 students are our special education students. We really focus on the delivery service based on student need. When we look at the data of the students, we group them according to the skills that they need. So if we have Tier 3 students, we take a look to see if they need a fluency group. Do they need a comprehension group? Do they need vocabulary? Sometimes they need both. Sometimes they need writing. Whatever it happens to be, we group those students based on their specific skills. We look at the interventions with the classroom teachers. We actually have weekly teamings, the PLCs, and we take a look every 4 weeks at the progress of the students so the classroom teacher can see when they're meeting with them in small group instruction under Tier 1 how the growth is coming in the RTI setting. So we want to make sure, again, that students are not flatlining, that we're responding quickly, not waiting for the next benchmark, if they're really showing absolutely no growth. And as sure as many of you see, we have new students that are arriving every day. We want to make sure that we're including any new students that are coming in based on their screenings and based on the teacher's database recommendations. And when I say database, I mean based on classroom materials, assessments, and how they've done when they've entered our building. And we line them up with other students that look like them that have similar needs. Intensity of service is determined in alignment with our current RTI tier system, and I mentioned that before, all four tiers. So Tier 1, again, for children requiring monitoring or classroom interventions in ELA, is specified by data team recommendations. And that's all of our kids. I don't know any child, whether they're high functioning or low functioning, that they don't need to have some monitoring, whether that's students that need some enrichment, that need something extra, or students that are right at the average range. So we take a look at all those kids. And those interventions are provided by the classroom teacher. We don't have a gifted program. We don't have any enrichment teachers. So we provide all interventions by our classroom teacher at Tier 1. Tier 2 are for students with moderate levels of delay, and I mentioned those are the students below the 25th percentile. We use a multi-testing system. When we look at data, we look at AIMSLab, but we also do common formative assessments quarterly. So we look at that data as well, and we also do classroom assessments when we're making the determination if they're Tier 2 or Tier 3 or Tier 1. We set the cut scores at each data meeting so we feel comfortable with the number of students who are being recommended at each level. For those students at Tier 2 are seen 2 or 3 times a week. We try and limit the groups to no more than 4 because we've really seen the impact of larger groups. It's just not as effective. The teachers have more difficult time really focusing on the specific needs of the students. And these groups are supplemental to the 90 to 120 minute ELA block. So they're getting that extra 30 minutes on top of the time they're already getting in the classroom. These services are happening by reading certified teachers, occasionally by special education teachers. And when I say occasionally, typically that's done if we have an integrated co-teach classroom, the child is in there, and the integrated co-teach has students that really have skills that are similar to the students needing RTI at Tier 2 or Tier 3, then the special education teacher will provide that as well. At times we have our ELL teachers provide it, and rarely, but sometimes our speech teacher will provide some of those services. Tier 3 are those students below the 10th percentile on AIMS Lab that they also need to indicate that they're well below average, whether they're on the common formative assessments or classroom assessments. Those students are seen 5 times a week, either individually or in groups of 2. And this is also supplemental to the 90 to 120 minute ELA block. Now, I can hear already in your mind some of you saying, well, how many intervention teachers do you have? We have, like I said, about 600 students here for Dundee Elementary, about 6 sections per grade level. I have, for kindergarten, I have 6 sections, about 20 to 22 kids per classroom, no aides, just a classroom teacher. I do have 1 dedicated reading specialist for kindergarten. And that's purposeful because I know and have seen how quickly the gap can be closed at that level much more easily than, again, when they get to the upper level. So I'd rather put the resources there where I can get more bang for my buck. And Donna is wonderful. She's our reading specialist, and I've seen this happen at the other schools that I work at. If you can intervene at kindergarten, it just really helps the child get on the right path for the rest of their schooling. At first grade, we've done the same thing. We have 1 reading specialist dedicated to our first grade. We have a little bit smaller classes in first grade, a little smaller of a grade level, but we have always had a dedicated reading specialist for first grade that works between those 6 classrooms. I then have another reading specialist that is split between second and third grade, and we actually do math RTI as well. Fredonia, so I have a math person that's split between second and third grade, and I have 1 RTI specialist that does both reading and math at the fourth grade level. And again, there's 6 sections in each of those grade levels. So establishing buy-in from your teachers. Again, we talked about having that RTI leadership team. Having your own 30-minute PowerPoint that really talks about your school and why it's important for you to have RTI and what will it look like at your school is huge. And if you can present that at a staff meeting, to aides, to anybody possible, PTA, board members, so really everybody is on the same page of what your goals are and how you're laying out RTI in your particular school. Get some of your well-respected teachers involved. Have them present to staff, and sometimes, actually a lot of times, it means a lot more coming from teachers, especially if they're well respected, than it does from administrators. It's just the nature of the beast. Further expose and educate your team to RTI, whether it's to go to conferences and talk to other schools that are doing RTI, to go do visits. We visited other schools. We sent our teams to lots of conferences. We have shelves of books and research that we will go through again. You know, we haven't looked at this book in a few years. Let's look again at why we got this and what the interventions are listed here. And as you're looking at doing this PowerPoint or presenting this to your staff, really thinking about why you're doing RTI and presenting that, what the definition and examples of tiers are, and then what your plan is, what's next. So they, everybody's on the same page about why you're doing it. Relationship building. As administrators, we all know the importance of relationship building, that relationships probably will get you further than anything else. If you can really spend your time with your leadership team talking about under-promising and over-delivering. Really, we're going to do the best we can. Under-promise. Don't promise things that you're not 100% sure that you can do, but always, always follow through, over-deliver. Always follow through with teachers, with other administrators, with parents. Always over-deliver. Give them even more than they asked for. It's just really beneficial. Work with teachers initially who are excited. So I know when I first started this, I started with teachers that would ask, they would ask questions about new procedures, new policies, whatnot. And I knew I could get them on board. And then if they start sharing what their data looks like and what's happening in their classroom, other teachers want to know, well, what's going on? How come they're able to do that? I want to have exposure to that as well. I want to have that opportunity. And especially if you're documenting growth with their students, I don't know a teacher that won't want to have that happening in their classroom. That consistency is important, setting up those calendars, setting up the data meetings, setting up the protocol for the benchmark assessment, and being at the meetings as an administrator. We all have a million things we could be doing, maybe people think we should be doing, but if RTI is a priority for you, you need to show it by being at the meetings and being consistent with what you're telling your teachers. It's on my calendar. My secretaries know that. Looking around my desk right now, I have piles and piles, as I do every day. But RTI is really important. It's an umbrella that I know everything fits under. Tier 1 is all my kids. Tier 2 is those kids that are struggling a little. And those kids that Tier 3 are kids that I'm really worried about. Those are my priorities, and my priority is to have high student achievement. And always follow through. So if you have a meeting, a data meeting, and you talk to a team and you see that attendance is an issue and you say you'll follow up on it, make sure that you always do follow up on it and get back to everybody. Always follow through. Again, back to that under-promise and over-deliver. Always follow through if you say you're going to do something. So really proactively addressing misconceptions and fears. These are some statements that I've heard over the last few years. And I hear it even with some of my veteran teachers, and we've been doing this for a while. Why do I have to jump through these hoops to get special education services for my students? What I'd love to point out to them is a lot of times a child that's receiving RTI services, especially at Tier 3, are getting more services than our special education students. It's really not a complicated thing to jump through. It's just a really good thing for kids. It's really ensuring that we can't close the gap without special education. So it's really not more. Special education isn't more. It's really RTI is more, giving them a lot of the services. And a lot of the students, many of them, will close the gap and will be able to be just a Tier 1 student throughout the rest of their school career. The second one is I don't have the time for all the extra work. And this is where your leadership team is really important to work together. When there are concerns about students sharing that well, the first couple of years with every school district I've worked at, I've had the leadership team assigned to a classroom teacher. So, for example, if I had a school psychologist on the team, I'll make sure that if I have a first grade teacher that's concerned about somebody that's receiving RTI services, that they know their go-to person is that school psychologist. So the RTI leadership team all has a group of teachers that are their go-to people. So they know who to ask questions. They know who will help them fill out forms. They know who will be able to give them answers about data. They have a go-to person, so they're not worried about it, concerned about it. And they have somebody to help them fill out some of that paperwork. and really limiting the paperwork. I think a lot of the paperwork that we do, that I've seen schools do with RTI, is mundane and monotonous and doesn't need to be done. So we'll talk about that at the next webinar. The next misconception is we don't have money in our budget for that program. I don't know, you don't have money in your budget to not do this program. Otherwise, you're going to have students that are labeled RTI, labeled special ed, that aren't. And that costs a lot more money, both emotionally and in your budget, for students. And then the last one is a big fear that I finally got some of my teachers to voice. What is the data going to say about me? And that fear that if we're looking at the data for their classroom, it's going to show that maybe they're not as effective teachers as they are trying to be. And we always tell them the data is about the students. The data tells us, you know, how the students are doing. We as teachers and educators are responsible to look at that data and have it tell us. So we need to respond to it. So I have no problem with a teacher who has children in her classroom that aren't doing well if they tell me how they're going to address it, and they do. It happens every year. We don't mean to do it, but every year there happens to be a class or two that just ends up with a very low group. If a teacher starts out with that low group and has an action plan in responding to their needs through instruction, differentiated interventions, and those students are making growth, that speaks volumes. Even if that their level of growth isn't as much as the classroom next door, if the teacher can show me that they're responding, it says a lot about them as an educator. So what do you think? What are some of the most commonly expressed misperceptions and fears in your district? So you can just take a look at this and then maybe think for a few seconds about how will you address this? What would you do to address this? And what are some conversations that you could have or set up? Okay, so some things you can do about it. What do you think? What are some things that you can do about it? Whether you can my suggestions or other ideas that you have, or if you have questions, feel free to ask. So I just want to go through some lessons learned. Again, I've been doing response to intervention procedures probably since the early 2000s, if not earlier, late 1990s, in various school districts. Starting in Ohio, I actually have traveled across the country and have worked in schools in the state of Washington, Idaho, Wyoming, all the way to Maine, talking about implementation about RTI. Big lessons learned, it's small steps. Really look at what worked this year, what worked last quarter, and what didn't work. And having people be honest with you, that's where your RTI leadership team is so important. You have to be honest with each other. How do you get better? Instead of just coming up with a list of reasons why it didn't work, really problem solve about what can we do to improve. Every year we get better. Every year, every school district I work with, we get better. We think about it. Despite multiple changes in curriculum and Common Core, whatever it happens to be, school makeup. When I first started at Fredonia, our free and reduced lunch rate was 14% 10 years ago. We've jumped up to 42%. Our school population has changed significantly in the last 10 years. How are we responding to that? Don't give up. You might find a program that you think is the end-all, be-all, and you're going to implement it with your Tier 3 students, and you come to find out after you've done it, it's horrible. It doesn't meet the needs of students. It's not what you thought it was. Don't give up. Go on to something else. Look up again on the TAC website. Try and find other things that might work for you. Maybe you're on your fourth principal for the school year. Maybe you're on your fourth superintendent. Don't give up. Go back to all of those things that you have control over and having those best practices in place. Don't give up. Teamwork is a process that requires continual attention and maintenance. And that is the truth. Any team that I've worked on, I can't just assume that it's going to run smoothly, that everybody's on the same page with me. I have to just stop every once in a while and just say, all right, are we on the same page? What's working? What's not working? Is the communication what it needs to be, both from me and to me? Are we all focused on the same goals and really paying attention to the staff and the teachers and making sure that they have the resources and supports that they need within your budgetary limits? So the biggest thing here, looking at this triangle, is really knowing that trust, establishing those relationships and that trust with your staff is huge, the biggest foundation. Conflict will come in. You'll have disagreements. You'll have people that don't understand or are defensive because they don't understand. Some of those conflicts with, why do I have to jump through these hoops? I just want help from my students. Or that student doesn't belong in my classroom. Or the student's parents aren't helping. Whatever it happens to be, that conflict. Really working through that conflict will give you that next step of commitment. We're all committed to their students. Again, I don't know one educator that doesn't want their students to be the best that they can be and to achieve the most that they can. Having that commitment to doing so, that extra little bit. We need some accountability. We need to make sure that our administrators are accountable, that we are at the meetings, that we're following through on the things that we promise that we're going to do. And then that trickles down to everybody else in the building. If we're accountable and we're showing that, this is important, that we also will hold the teachers accountable and other staff members will have the results. It really does end up in having good results for your students. Overall climate with everything, it really, really does work. All right, so we did this little poll at the beginning of the webinar, and we took a look at these statements. And take a look now, and let's go through this. Hopefully I do it, yep. So looking at the first one, most schools employ a two-tier RTA model that is designed to provide intervention services to students who are considered at risk. Really, most schools that have a three or a four-tier RTI model. Number two, determining who will receive intervention services is based on the recommendation of the child's teacher. That is false. That really depends on the data. What does the data indicate? What do they need? And then that tells you who will receive those services. Special education teachers do not provide the bulk of intervention services. Really, that needs to come from your reading teachers. Or former AIS teachers, as they're supposed to be called. In New York State, choosing to use an RTI process for identifying students with disabilities is optional. That is true when you're looking at students with disabilities other than reading. Reading, we need to use, it's a mandate to use the RTI process when you identify students with disabilities, with a learning disability. If you're looking at behavior disabilities, if you're looking at emotional disabilities, if you're looking at mental retardation, other areas, then you're going to use the IQ achievement model. And then the last one, intervention services are provided to at-risk students in place of regular reading instruction, and that is not true. RTI services should be supplemental to students in addition to what's happening in the general education classroom. Okay, so at this point, it's 5 o'clock. We have about 15 minutes left. I'd love to open this up to questions, comments, thoughts. If you feel like your school is employing some of these methods, if they're working, I'd love to have this part be a chat session. So, any questions? I hear a lot of silence, but I can see you're all still there, so hopefully we'll have a few questions come into place. As I'm looking back at the conversation that we just had or that I had with you, we really wanted to change the AIS title to RTI. That was a big piece in our school district because we really feel like we're not providing academic intervention services any longer. We're really providing response to intervention services. And we at Fredonia provide RPI for math and ELA, as well as writing services. So we don't call it AIS any longer. We had a meeting with our Board of Education as well as our PTA. As the principal sent out a letter about what RTI is and the fact that we look at this every quarter. And we may have students that weren't receiving services one quarter, then may receive them the next. But also as the demands and the rigor increases throughout the year, we may have a student then be back in RTI if they're not showing the gains. And that tends to happen more at the primary level than at the upper levels. But we definitely have had students bounce in and out. The other thing that my school board and superintendent has been very supportive of is RTI is not an option. It's our accountability to the students to ensure that they're making the growth that they need to make by grade level. So a parent cannot opt a child out of RTI. That it's just not negotiable part of our curriculum. When we had big opt-out numbers, we were starting to get some parents questioning if they could opt out of our benchmark assessments. And again, I had great support from our superintendent in stating that that is part of our curriculum, that we need to have that accountability to ensure the students are making the growth that they need to. So we did not allow anybody to opt out of our benchmark assessments either. Another piece that we look at, again, I think I told you we developed common interim assessments, and I'll talk about that more at our next webinar. You know, that really other piece of data really has helped us move past just the screening piece of a benchmark assessment, especially when we're looking at the content of the intervention and what needs to be addressed in the small groups. So I'll talk a little bit more about that next week. And hopefully all of you will come back. Again, any questions, concerns, feel free to type it in the chat box.
I'd just like to take a moment and thank everyone for joining us for today's webinar. Before you leave, please be sure to take the webinar feedback survey, and you could find the link to that in the bottom right-hand corner of your screen. If you haven't signed up for the other two sessions for this webinar strand, I would highly recommend that you go over to our website at New York State RTI, so nysrti.org, and look for them under current webinars.
All right, well, thanks everybody for coming. Hopefully that you'll be on board next week and we'll dive a little bit deeper into RTI, especially at the administrative level. I hope to, I guess, see you all on the computer next week.